morning, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. This is a first. The good Senator Boquist is always here. But we're going to go ahead and start since we want to make sure that we get everything done. So there are a number of senators here. We're going to start with House Bill 4098, Representative Meek. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4098.
You didn't want to do
Madam Vice Chair,
no.
Did you want to?
No, I won't do my poem.
Madam Chair.
I have one, but I will wait to see if we have time at the end.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4098 directs the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to prepare and distribute written materials regarding apprenticeship opportunities for veterans to county veteran service officers, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, the Employment Department, the Oregon Military Department, the Oregon National Guard, and any other organizations it identifies. It requires ODVA to train VSOs and veterans organizations about apprenticeship programs and education benefits available for veterans. It takes effect the 91st day after signee die. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. The measure came out of House Committee on a unanimous vote and off the floor of the House with a unanimous vote.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Mark Meek from House District 40, which includes Oregon City, Gladstone, Jennings Lodge, Johnson City, and unincorporated Clackamas County regions. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning in support of House Bill 4098. The concept arose out of conversations that I had in the interim with both veterans and members of the building trades. And we were speaking about how we can ensure that more veterans learn about these apprenticeship opportunities, as well as federal education benefits that they may be eligible for. And as you heard, it passed the House unanimously on February 16th, which was a very proud moment. A little bit of background about myself. I served for 8 years in the United States Air Force and started taking classes during that time. And when I got out, I was planning to go to school and finish my degree at Portland State. And through that process, was referred to the Veteran Resource Office there at Portland State. And they actually helped me navigate the learning process there at Portland State, and then helped me get one of my first jobs and getting reintegrated back into the civilian life. And I appreciate coming out of 8 years in the military and then coming back into civilian life was totally different. And so I understand what a lot of our veterans are going through, trying to reintegrate or integrate into the workforce once you leave the military life. So what I'm finding out, what we've determined through this learning process, is that there are too many of our veterans that are not getting these same opportunities, and the data shows it. Unemployment among Oregon's veterans is unacceptably high. According to the Census Bureau's current population survey from 2016, the unemployment rate for Oregon veterans was 6.3%, and that was 28.5% higher than Oregon's overall unemployment rate, and it's 46.5% higher than the unemployment rate for veterans in America. And I just think, you know, we can and we must do better for our veterans here in Oregon that are serving our country. And I believe that this apprenticeship program will play a vital role in that process. As you can see, the House Bill 4098 does three things. It establishes and directs Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to do three things. First, to develop and provide written materials about apprenticeship opportunities to veterans. Second, to share these materials with several state agencies, including Oregon Employment Department, Military Department and National Guard, and the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And in addition to these agencies, ODVA will also distribute these materials to county veteran service officers and our veteran service organizations. And then third, House Bill 4098 directs ODVA to provide annual trainings on apprenticeship programs as well as federal veterans educational benefits to the county VCOs, VSOs, and veteran service organizations located in our communities. In conclusion, I know that this bill isn't the complete solution, but I think it's an important, very vital initial step to take during this short session. And I hope that it will open up new avenues for the for our veterans that are, you know, finishing their service or just in the middle of getting ready to complete their service, to both apply for and earn the full, you know, benefits that they should enjoy for serving our country. So, in conclusion, I want to thank you for your consideration of House Bill 4098, and I recommend your do pass recommendation to the Senate floor. Thank you very much, and I'll wait here for any questions.
Let's finish with the panel and then open it up for questions.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, panel members. My name is Dallas Hurd, House District 2, Roseburg area. I just wanted to start by thanking Rep. Meek for bringing this bill forward. It's somewhat of a continuation of some of the work we worked on last year in 2017's legislative session. We had a similar bill that focused strictly on public school education as far as bringing this information together for the students and their guardians to see and have that focused and put right in front of them so that they are aware of these job opportunities and these training opportunities. So again, I'd like to thank Rep. Meek for bringing this forward. I'm just going to focus on the potential benefits that I see for our veterans, and then I'll wrap up. So I'm here in support of House Bill 4098. It focuses on CTE training and getting that information in front of our veterans. The benefit for rural Oregonians, I think, is quite great, because if you're not aware of it, down in Douglas County and Curry County, we're in the top five across the country as far as county population of veteran saturation. So there's a lot of veterans down in rural Oregon, especially in my neck of the woods, who would very much benefit from this kind of an effort from the state. And as the good representative said, it's not the final tool, but it's a big tool in the tool bag of helping people get good high-wage earning opportunities. As the grandson of a World War II veteran, I'd like to think that my experience with my grandfather, as well as several of my friends who are Marines and whatnot, that I somewhat know what they're like. I've seen an unparalleled work ethic in that population. Our veterans are amazing individuals, as we're all aware of. And I think we should be doing everything possible to give them these opportunities and let them know what's out there. The great thing about this, the skilled trades, is that for our veterans there is no cost for their education, and in some opportunities they will go from apprenticeship wages to full journeyman day one once they complete their education program through their GI Bill benefits. So we're talking $70,000 to $80,000 a year salaries and benefits programs day one once they complete that education, an education that costs them nothing if we just get this information in front of them. I'd say in conclusion, I'd like to, again, kind of feel like I can relate to a lot of veteran individuals that I've known. I think we share a similar way of looking at life. We're people that enjoy the outdoors. We're people that enjoy making things with our hands. And the skilled trades are a perfect fit for those types of individuals like myself. So I'd greatly appreciate passage of this legislation onto the Senate floor.
Questions, colleagues? Good, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. I read this bill. It's a good bill. I support the bill. I was wondering, the term it has, to direct Department of Veterans Affairs versus direct Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. So there is a difference. You know, at the state, we cannot direct the federal government to start this program. So that was the only thing I saw in there that would, you know, just pop up, you know, because as it reads, I'm telling the federal government that this is what I want instead of Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Do you want me to take it? So thank you for the question, Senator. I believe this is strictly in reference to the state Department of Veterans Affairs. It's not a directive towards the federal government, and there's some other folks that'll come behind us here that can testify to that and correct me if I'm wrong. But from my understanding, this is strictly focused on state resources and bringing those resources together in conjunction with our federal partners. But it's not directing the federal government to do anything.
Right, I completely agree. That's the way I took it as well. But it reads different, so I don't know if that's a big thing or just a technical, just add Oregon in front of it. I don't know.
Council, you want to jump in? Since I'm not going to throw them under the bus, I've already been in the ice this morning. I don't want to throw them under the bus.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is embedded in the section that governs the State Department of Veterans Affairs, and it does refer to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Very good catch.
Okay.
Are you happy?
I support the bill. I even when I got over here, I put my name on it. So.
Well, this late in session, you got to make sure you're happy because we won't actually have to move the bill today, which is not normally it.
No, it's a good bill.
Anything else, gentlemen? And I
here, oh, please.
Thank you very much. I just added my name to it. I actually had a bill very similar to this in past sessions to open up apprenticeship programs for veterans when they came out so that they wouldn't have to requalify and recertify for the information that they already knew. Mm-hmm. So that, and it turns out we really didn't have to do the bill because the apprenticeship programs already integrate the veterans, so it's a really cool thing. The problem is, Representative Meek, that you're in the Air Force and we're all Army guys, so you're kind of in trouble up here.
Well, thank you very much.
Careful. I mean, it's a good thing I came in to save you from the ice, because if not, you know, you would have just been gaveled down by the vice chair who was in the Air Force.
That's right.
Pointing out to you, sometimes when you walk through, you know, Kalmanur or you wrestle with a pig, you know, happens. Colleagues, very quick question for you, though. We normally, we are in 1 hour notice and we're moving rapidly towards our demise, which is good. You know, most of the public thinks we should all leave here. That's bipartisan, by the way. We normally carry these over. We may, in fact, move this bill this morning because we do have a motion for a possible work session. I'm assuming on the House side it was open for a little bit and there was plenty of input and discussion on the House side.
Yeah, go ahead,
please.
Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to finish up with one other comment, that in the Governor's State of the State address, she referenced how there's tens of thousands of skilled labor jobs going unfilled in Oregon right now. I can attest to the fact that we have several high-pay job openings down in Douglas County and Southern Oregon that when I talk to individuals who are looking for qualified labor, qualified skilled individuals, they're not finding those people. So I can't think of a better group than our veterans to harness their work ethic and their integrity and get them into that field as quickly as possible. So we'd greatly appreciate you moving this.
Great. Yeah, and thank you, Chair Boquist. We did have plenty of time for input, and it did pass the House floor unanimously.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
I'm intending to kind of move on as long as the good senator has a few minutes. Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to call up Dan Dvorak and Brian Craig and Ryan Tribbett, if you would, please. And I think you're going to give us a little bit of detail. Appreciate any input you have. It looks like the majority of the members or all the members are in favor of it. Less is more, more is less. Don't screw it up, gentlemen.
Good morning, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dale Dvorak. I am here on the representation of the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters. I'm here on behalf of the carpenters in support of this House bill. First and foremost, I'm a veteran myself, United States Marine Corps. I'm also third generation military. My grandfather served in the Army in World War II, has two Purple Hearts. My father, United States Marine Corps. He was in the Cold War. I protect the U.S. embassies, and I myself also protect the U.S. embassies overseas, too. So my passion for veterans is pretty much second to none. As of right now, I'm the point person for the regional council, so I actually cover six states, but Oregon is where I live at. And I basically facilitate the Helmets to Hard Hats program for the carpenters. And right now we have about 20,000 carpenters throughout the six states. We have 6,200 carpenters here in Oregon, and we have 1,500 apprentices here in Oregon and 3,000 apprentices within the six states. We have roughly almost 300 veteran apprentices right now. Now, unfortunately, with the way it has been gone is, and when we try to reach out to try to get veterans, there's no designation trying to get them. When I came out of the Marine Corps, nobody taught me about the program. I was fortunate where my dad had came out, went through an apprenticeship program, so I kind of had a forerunner, so to speak, and kind of give me some guidance. Like, oh, well, this is where you needed to go. Unfortunately, most people get out of the military, they come from Germany, all the different places, dispatched. Nobody ever tells them about the programs that are available to them. As a brother or a carpenter, and I talk on all the trades because the apprenticeship program is good for everybody. I mean, we have plumbers, electricians, all the different trades out there, all the different apprenticeship programs. I'm speaking on the carpenters, but it's bigger for the bigger picture of it. And so we need to reach out there. So what I had to do literally is go to everything I could possibly do. We go to workforce programs, we go to outreach programs, anything we could do to try to get the military people, and we've done a very good job, but That's the problem is why do we have to try to get everybody together when we could do something a little different and get it to the Veterans Affairs and the different organizations to make them aware of the different programs, you know, so they can get a skilled trade, a skilled, you know, have our workforce. And like I said, the workforce itself is so diverse right now, and it's so we have 10,000 baby boomers a day leaving the market. So it is my honor to speak on this bill. It will impact so many veterans that have served and sacrificed their lives for our country. The bill will give valuable information about apprenticeships for all the trades, give them a living wage. As a carpenter, our journeyman carpenters right now are about $53 now. It's about $100,000 a year. Great benefits, a great trade, and skills that'll basically pass on forever. Right, they can build their own home, they can build this. It's a trade that lasts on forever. Since we're on top of the state's amount of homeless, you know, Representative Meeks didn't mention this earlier, but Oregon right now has the largest homeless population for veterans in pretty much the nation. And that, to me, is just, it's not a good thing. How about that? So I urge you to support the bill, and thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have for me.
For the record, Ryan Tribbett here today on behalf of the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council in support of House Bill 4098. I'm not going to repeat anything anyone else said, but to add a little bit of sort of practical impact to one of the comments that Representative Hurd made when he talked about how the building trades and any of our programs, we pay tuition for anyone who's accepted into the programs. For a veteran who comes with their own GI benefits to that, since tuition is already paid, the GI benefits are actually allowed to go towards closing the gap between the journeyman wage and the apprentice wage, and that in most cases is somewhere around like 40% of journeyman scale in year one for people. And so like an electrician, for instance, that would get say $60 an hour as a journeyman would get only 40% of that as day one as an apprentice, but with their GI benefits they make approximately $55 an hour on day one. And I just thought how exciting this is, just to get this information to veterans. I feel like if they knew on their first day of their college education that they'd be getting paid what they get at the end of their education and certification, I don't think that it would be a difficult decision for many of them to make. I think we'd get a lot more of them into our programs, and we're really excited about that prospect. So urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, Brian Krieg for the record, representing the UA 290 plumbers, the sheet metal workers of Local 16, the electricians of IBW, and the contractors of PMCA and SMACNA. As most of you, with the exception of Senator Manning, remember last spring, the training directors for those groups came before you, and we talked about Senator Olson's issues. We presented about our programs, and I think really in the robust discussion we had that day, and then even afterwards, we did really identify and lock in on the fact that there's an informational kind of gap that was happening. It was very hard for our groups to reach out to such a diffused population and try to get them in. You saw the during that hearing the passion that our folks have of getting the veterans into our programs and getting them through. So our training directors, in seeing this bill, were, I got to say, they're very excited, and they want to work with the agencies involved to create these materials and help develop stronger pathways so we can get more veterans into our program. Thank you.
Thank you, Felix. Senator Manning, if you would, please.
Just real quick, I was wondering whether or not you have approached Joint Base Lewis-McChord. They have an out-processing section there that gives all kind of jobs, they hold job fairs and everything. Probably a good place to put a tag in, push pin in there, so that the veterans that's getting ready to transition out already have that information.
So to answer your question, Senator Manning, yes, I have. We have carpenters up in McChord up there. And so we, every time, you know, it costs $1,000 to get in there. And they have programs. They had about, I think it was last one, when they had like 700 veterans come through there and trying to give them jobs. It's like a job fair, so to speak. And so we try to hit all of those. Right. So, but it's a program that reaches out, you know, they're trying to recruit or help military. Helmets to Hard Hats, a national program, also trying to help out. But that's all external. Why can't we do an internal? And we have our organizations like Veterans Affairs and help them give them information. And then they'd have that, you know, expansion of knowledge as far as, okay, these are opportunities, plumbers, electricians, carpenters, all these different ones. And we try to reach out to them as much as we can. And unfortunately, what we found is that by the time people get to the Veterans Affairs, too, and by the time people get to those places, they're in a position that's not so good for them. And they get to these outreach. So, you know, if we could get it to them before they get to these positions of, you know, homelessness, getting into places where they, you know, exhausted of trying to, you know, trying to get something. So if we could get to those points, and yes, we try to explore and do everything we possibly can. There's probably, I'd say probably 10 or 12 different outreach programs and different things that we do, workforce. We just had our training center. We tried to bring in the Helmets, Tardats coordinator for the regional council, or for the region, our region, so about, it covers about 10 states. The Veterans Affairs themselves, we tried to bring them in, workforce programs. So we're trying to do everything we can. But it would be nice to have a document that would send that out to them to get them information about us, too. Yes, sir.
I would assume, I see ODVA in the back, and they're not signed up to testify, which is fine. I'm sure they did a fabulous job on the far side. I would just note for the record and look for someone to nod their head back there that I would assume under 4098, they do have an email list. They do annual mailers and a little packet that goes out to people. And there's certainly the opportunity to put in that annual mailer that goes out, you know, this opportunity that's in there. And I see, you know, three heads nodding in the back, so I think that that's, besides just preparing written material, I think all three of you gentlemen know that they do a biannual or annual mailer that goes out, and they have sometimes feel-good articles and maybe a little feel-good block that says, hey, if you need a job, here's a high-paying job and a way to get it. So with that, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on House Bill 4098? We're going to close the public hearing on 4098. We normally hold these bills open, but since we're on 1 hour notice, nobody knows what notice really means. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 4098. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Bogus, I move House Bill 4098 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
The Honorable Vice Chair Melinda Sanderson moves House Bill 4098 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. I know that the good senator to my far right, Senator Olson, already volunteered. So you'll be carrying this on the floor.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
With Can I that, volunteer?
I was told you were volunteer. Okay, let me rephrase that. Sergeant, you were voluntold by the vice chair. Okay. So you're carrying regardless. Okay,
with that, volunteer in the Army.
Right. We're going to close the public hearing on, or the work session on House Bill 4098. I am told, even though we have half of the House of Representatives in the audience back there and senators, I am told we're going to open a dual public hearing and work session on HCR 202 and HCR 20. Oh, excuse me. Yes, HCR 202 and HCR 207. Is Representative Olson, okay, that is back there. I'm just following instructions here, so if you would please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 202 recognizes and honors First Lieutenant Frederick Corney, Jr. for his service to his country. HCR 207 recognizes and honors Trooper Ralph Bates for his service to Oregon.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Pam Olson. Good morning, Chair Boquist and Senator Germana Sanderson. Other members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present House Concurrent Resolution 202. This is First Lieutenant Frederick Picorni, Jr. This is truly an amazing honor to bring this measure before you. First Lieutenant Picorni started his career as an enlisted man. He ended it as an officer. At 6'6", he played center on the Tonopah, Nevada high school basketball team, which was runner-up for the state championship in 1989. He was nice-looking, tall, muscular kid, said Joanne Cody, assistant sheriff in Nye County. Frederick Picorni Jr. was born in Oakland, California on August 20th, 1971. His mother left when he was one, said his father, Frederick Picorni, who lives in Branson, Missouri. The elder Picorni had not spoken to his son in more than 5 years. It's sad, but I don't know much about his life, his father said. He had his own life and didn't want to have much to do with me. Fred moved to Nevada with his father, a construction worker, for temporary employment as a missile test range near Tonopah. After his father left, his son stayed in Tonopah, living with the Nye County Sheriff and his basketball coach, who helped raise him. He was my son, former Sheriff Wade Neske said. From there, Pokorny Jr. made his own way in life. People who knew him say he was a very good person, independent, polite, and friendly. He was a good student, very diligent, said Art Johnson, who taught him auto mechanics for 2 years. He received a football scholarship at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas. An ankle injury ended his football career and led him to find his position with the United States Marine Corps. In 1993, he enlisted in the Marine Corps and finished at the top of his boot camp class. While he was stationed in the Naval Submarine Base Bingham in Silverton, Washington, he met Shelley, better known as Shelley. She was a nurse in the local community college, and they would marry. Shelley encouraged him to apply to the Marine Enlisted Commissioning Education Program, which provides a pathway for outstanding Marine Corps enlisted personnel to become commissioned officers. So in 1997, that's what brought him to Oregon State University, where he would receive his commission as second lieutenant. On March 23, 2003, 2nd Lieutenant Pokorny's unit was ambushed, but despite heavy and restrained enemy fire, he showed great courage in expertly directing and coordinating artillery fire from his exposed position before being mortally wounded. He died 2 years to the day after he was commissioned. He was awarded a posthumous Silver Star for his conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action against the enemy, and in his display of courage under fire during the engagement through rapid decision-making and confident actions. He was promoted to first lieutenant after death. Marines who survived the attack testified to his bravery, skill, and selfless sacrifice, which saved the lives of many of his fellow Marines, including Ben Williams, whom he personally rescued while under harrowing enemy fire. First Lieutenant Pokorny was the first Marine that was killed in Iraq. In accordance with his wishes, he was laid to rest in the Arlington National Cemetery. And his wife and his child are promoters of the veterans and do a lot with the group. His daughter, who was just two when he died, wants to receive a doctorate's degree in psychology and work with veterans who are suffering. So I ask you to adopt this measure.
Thank you, ma'am. HCR 207.
Okay. So this is State Police Trooper Ralph Bates. Ralph Bates was born in Long Beach, California, to Albert and Peggy Bates on September 26, 1938. He graduated from Medford High School in 1956 and served for 4 years in the United States Navy. He worked in a lumber mill in Medford before joining the Oregon State Police. Ralph became a member of the Oregon State Police on May 1, 1962. After attending recruit school, he was assigned to the Arlington office in the traffic division. Trooper Bates had celebrated his 24th birthday just over a month before the evening of November 8, 1962. Shortly after 7 p.m. on the 8th, Trooper Bates pulled over a vehicle on Highway 30 for a traffic violation. After he approached the driver pointed a gun and fired at the officer, hitting him in the chest. The driver then fled the scene. A passing motorist stopped to assist, finding Trooper Bates lying on the pavement next to his patrol car. The motorist used the patrol car's radio to call in the incident. Investigators discovered that Bates had written down the license plate number of the vehicle. Officers throughout the region were alerted, and about 3.5 hours later, two officers stopped the suspect near Condon. When they approached the car, Edward Schickler, the 27-year-old driver, went for a .22 caliber weapon on the seat next to him. He did not fire at the officers and was taken into custody. According to the Pendleton East Oregonian, Schickler was a former mental patient at the Salem and Pendleton Mental Hospitals. The gun was a .22 caliber rifle that had been sawed off to about 8 inches. Schickler was later committed to the state mental hospital and died there. He survived by his parents, two brothers, and a sister, which they have not been able to locate. And I urge you to support this HCR. Thank you.
Ma'am, you did an exceptional job.
Thank you.
colleagues, questions?
And what, again, what we normally do is carry them over. However, we're actually going to move all the HCRs in block at the end of this, at a work session at the end of this particular time frame. So we'll be doing that for you or the representative have any contact, anybody, or a choice of who would carry it on our floor, or do you want me just to assign someone?
I think Representative Olson would like to carry him. If possible, is that a normal procedure?
No, we're in the Senate.
Oh, that's right. No, he didn't contact anybody.
I didn't know he was running for the Senate.
Yes, yeah. As far as I know, he's not.
I think you might know.
I don't know who he.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll deal with that as we get along.
All right.
You did an exceptional job. Thank you very much, and we appreciate the representative in the House bringing this to our attention, and we look forward to honoring both the trooper and the first lieutenant.
Thank you.
With that, and again, for the record, we're actually going to open all of the HCR work sessions at the end. We're going to close public hearing HCR 202 and 207 and open a public hearing on HCR 205 and HCR 209. Senator Roblin, if you would, please. Thank you for patiently waiting.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 205 was previously heard on the 21st and scheduled held over for today. And I believe we heard from Representative McEwen on that date. HCR 209, this is its first hearing, recognizes and honors Lance Corporal Ryan Paul Bertrand for his service to his country.
So, and you might as well, since there's two others also from my district, in 204, let me make sure I get this right. Let's go back. 203, 204, 205, and 209.
I'm going to open a public hearing on HCR 203, 204, too.
Okay. So, we'll start out with 203. This is a, and come on up. Please, thank you. Thanks. We can have everybody. You guys can start. Go ahead.
I'd be happy to start on 203. That's all right.
We're on.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. I'm Ron Noble from House District 24, which is essentially McMinnville up to Hillsboro and all of the wonderful farm and wine country in between. I had the absolute privilege and honor to carry these resolutions, both 203 and 204, having worked in law enforcement for nearly three decades and watched too many of my Oregon colleagues sacrifice their lives in the line of duty, many of whom I knew and several who were my friends. This is a privilege for me to be able to bring Deputy Thomas Farrell from Tillamook County, which is HCR 203, to you. We have the distinct privilege as legislators to create laws and create policy, and part of those laws actually are to authorize and give authority to individuals to enforce those laws. So my view is that law enforcement actually does the bidding of the state legislature and the state of Oregon. So when somebody, in doing what we ask them to do, actually give their lives to better the lives of Oregonians, to protect and to serve all of us, it's quite a privilege for me to then, in some way, some small way, provide some appreciation for the dedication and the sacrifice they made, and to recognize and support their families who lost a father, a brother, a son, husband, or friend. I also would bring, while I'm talking to you, HCR 204, which is Deputy Gil Dayton, who worked in Coos County, again, giving his life in the line of duty for what we've asked him to do to serve the citizens of the state of Oregon. With that, I would turn it over to Aaron to provide some more detailed insight into what these officers did and their service.
Chairman Boquist, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you for having me here on behalf of the Oregon Fallen Officer Memorial Fund regarding the Fallen Officer Memorial Highway Sign Program. For the record, my name is Erin Edlin Cutter.
See, she's done this before. She recognizes it. Thank you, ma'am. Please continue.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'd like to go in order, starting with HCR 203, honoring Deputy Thomas Farrell. And over the past few months, it's been an absolute pleasure for me to get to work with the Farrell family in preparing for the legislative session this year. And it's through the sharing of their stories that I've actually had the opportunity to get to know a little bit more about the amazing man that Deputy Farrell was. And I'd like to share a little bit about him with you. Deputy Thomas Farrell was born May 4th, 1939, to James and Mildred Farrell. He had six siblings. He married the love of his life, Kathleen, also known as Kay, on June 13th, 1959, and together they had four children, Tammy, Thomas II, Teresa, and Tracy. He was a veteran, serving 2 years in the U.S. Navy Reserves and 20 years in the U.S. Air Force. He began his career in law enforcement as a Tillamook County Reserve in 1978. He also served as a Tillamook County 911 dispatcher before he became a deputy sheriff with the Tillamook County Sheriff's Office on January 9th, 1984. Deputy Farrell loved to hunt, and he was a passionate fly fisher, enjoying tying his own flies. He cared for a 400-acre farm where he raised beef cattle and baled hay in the summer months. He loved spending time with his family and friends, especially his grandchildren. Deputy Farrell was killed in the line of duty on April 22, 1987, and he was just 47 years old. Deputy Farrell had a calling to serve, but he also had a vibrant life outside of law enforcement. It was filled with love and memories, memories that were unfortunately cut too short when he paid the ultimate sacrifice. It's often said when an officer is killed in the line of duty, gone but never forgotten, and that is a promise that we take very seriously. And to kind of put it into respect for you, when I was with the Farrell family when HCR 203 was read on the House floor, we actually ran into a trooper that was stationed outside of the House, and he actually recognized Kay Farrell and she him. And it turned out that he had actually worked with Deputy Farrell, and this promise meant enough to him that he did everything he could to quickly get someone else to cover his post so that he could be a familiar face to support the family as it was read on the House floor. So that kind of puts it in perspective that even after all these many years, this is a promise that we intend to keep. These highway memorial signs, they're incredibly important to our survivors. They're just one more way for us to remember these officers, the life that they lived, and the families that were left behind in the legacy. The Oregon Memorial, the Oregon Fallen Officer Memorial Fund is proud to purchase this highway sign for Deputy Farrell to eliminate any cost to the state, the Tillamook County Sheriff's Office, or to the Farrell family. So I ask that you refer HCR 203 to the House floor, and now moving on to HCR 204, if you don't mind.
Why don't we pause momentarily?
Okay. I'll just very short on this one. I'm really proud of the people here that brought this forward. Tillamook County is half of Tillamook County is in my district, and I happened to be on the floor when this memorial was read, along with three of the others, all of whom were from my district. I think it speaks volumes that a person who's on a 10-hour shift decides, because he hears about a rollover on the beach, that he just gets in his car and goes out to help. And he died of a heart attack while trying to help with this turned-over vehicle. And that's the kind of thing that our police officers and our military veterans do. When called to action, they just go to action. And it wasn't in any regard for himself. It was a regard for taking care of the things in Tillamook County. And I appreciate the efforts that people have brought forward for this bill.
Thank you, sir. Now proceed, ma'am.
Thank you. Again, my name is Erin Needland Cutter, here on behalf of the Oregon Fallen Officer Memorial Fund for the Oregon Fallen Officer Highway Memorial Signs Program. HCR 204 honors the life of Deputy Gil Dayton with Coos County Sheriff's Office. I actually remember hearing about the death of Deputy Dayton, and it was an absolute honor for me to be asked to take the official photos for his memorial service. And since that day, I've had a number of opportunities to work with the Dayton family, as well as learn of many different relationships that common relationships that I had with others, acquaintances and friends, with Deputy Dayton. And he truly was an amazing law enforcement officer, but he was a wonderful father, son, brother, all-around person. So to share a little bit about Deputy Dayton with you, Deputy Gil Dayton was born July 29, 1971, to Gil and Colleen Dayton. He had one sibling, his sister, Michelle. He had two daughters, Cheyenne, who was 15 at the time of his death, and a daughter, Jada, who was only 8 at the time of his death. Deputy Dayton was a skilled athlete, breaking the state records in shot put and discus while in high school. He served in law enforcement for 19 years, serving with the Myrtle Point Police Department, North Bend Police Department, Confederate Tribes Police Department, and Reedsport Police Department before being hired on December 20th, 2009 with the Coos County Sheriff's Office. During his law enforcement career, Deputy Dayton held numerous special assignments, including canine handler, a member of the South Coast Interagency Narcotics Team, Accident Response Team, Emergency Response Team, and Homicide Investigation Team. Outside of law enforcement, he enjoyed riding ATVs, target shooting, lake fishing, photography, camping, dancing, coaching his daughter Cheyenne's softball team, and spending time with his family. Deputy Dayton was killed in the line of duty on April 20th, 2015. He was just 43 years old. Deputy Dayton poured his heart and soul into law enforcement. And there's a quote on the one of the walls of the National Law Enforcement Memorial in D.C. by survivor Vivian Eney Cross that says, "It is not how these officers died that made them heroes, but it is how they lived." Now, after working on HCR 204, I can say I've heard countless stories about how Deputy Dayton was this. He was an amazing person, and I think it's safe to say that, you know, even in his death, he continues to positively impact individuals. And with this highway memorial sign, it's going to be one more piece in which we can remember, honor, and continue to have him impact people positively. So the Oregon Fallen Officer Memorial Fund is proud to purchase the highway memorial sign for Deputy Dayton to eliminate costs to the state, the Coos County Sheriff's Office, and to the Dayton family. So I ask that you refer HCR 204 to the Senate floor for consideration. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Arnie Roblin, State Senate District 5. Officer Dayton was that person that we just heard about. He was one of those people who the community loved. He got involved in things, whether it was sports and coaching and others. The funeral that was held at North Bend High School was an amazing event for a lot of us that had an opportunity to go there because of the outpouring of grief, but also a recognition of all the things that he had offered all the kids, his family in particular, and the willingness of our community to come together at this untimely death out in the forest patrol on a four-wheeler or when he was out doing his job. So again, I want to thank the previous speaker. This is a really great person who has been missed, will continue to be missed, but his service to our community was, and it was really our bigger community. When you listen to where he worked, Coquille, the Confederate Tribes of the Coos Loramquai Siusla, the Siusla, and then eventually the Coos County Department, it was a pretty amazing attempt to get into this, stay in this. He loved what he was doing. So thank you.
Any further comments? That's you, Representative.
Glad to. Again, Ron Noble from House District 24. My final comments is thank you for hearing us and my urging of passing House Concurrent Resolution 203 and 204 to the Senate floor. Thank you.
And we appreciate that, and we will be doing that at the end of the session here. Before the two of you might escape and we leave Senator Roblin here for two more, Senator Olson to my right has a question.
Pam, you'd mentioned the two signs, and thank you very much for purchasing the signs. Do you have locations already for them?
No, we don't. Not exactly. The families have been kind of thinking about it, and that's one of the things that we will be hopefully doing next, which is working with ODOT to determine exactly where it can be. I can say, I know with the Farrell family, they're hoping to have it somewhere close to Hebo, near the cemetery in which Deputy Farrell is buried. And then the Dayton family, I'm not quite sure. I would assume close to North Bend, close to where, you know, his daughter is, daughter Cheyenne is rooted, where he was really rooted in that community. So, again, it's, we haven't really begun that part yet with ODOT, and we look forward to working with those folks to determine the exact locations.
Follow up, please, Senator.
Yeah, follow up to you, Mr. Chair. These HCRs, do they qualify, or do we have to do another amendment to get ODOT to put the sign?
No, no, these qualify. This is the
okay.
This is the route.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
We in the Senate are less plentiful in our documentation, and so therefore the House was able to provide much more of these on an individual basis. We do appreciate that to the House. And just for the record, for the audience out there, both chambers are generally restricted to the number of bills or HCRs or memorials they can introduce. And in the Senate side, we consolidated all of ours, which is no less recognition of all the members, and we do appreciate the House on the far side. And with that, Representative Ma'am, thank you for testifying. And Senator, you have HCR 205 recognizing Private First Class Bryce Scott, which we kept open just so you could come this week to testify.
Thank you very much.
And we have HCR 209 recognizing and honoring Lance Corporal Brian Bertrand. And that's yours too.
Thank you again for the record, Senator Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay. So I'll start out with Private First Class Bryce M. Scott. He was assigned to the 4th Squadron, 4th Cavalry Regiment, Light Heavy Brigade Combat Team, 1st Infantry Division, based in Fort Riley, Kansas. And whereas Private First Class Scott was a 19D Cavalry Scout and belt-fed machine gunner, and whereas Private First Class Scott and the two other soldiers were working on a security checkpoint in Kandahar, province of Afghanistan, when they were ambushed by 8 insurgents, and whereas on July 21st, 2011, Private First Class Scott succumbed to the wounds sustained from small arms fire while trying to help one of his fellow soldiers. This was a big thing in Florence. He'd spent a lot of his time in Florence. He grew up in Eugene, came to Florence. They had a Coast Guard flyby, and there's a group of people, veterans in Florence, that put flags out up and down Highway 101 on these occasions. And all of that happened to honor him. He was also honored at in Kansas at Fort Riley. And I appreciate the fact that we continue to make sure that we honor these heroes of our communities, and I commend you to this memorial.
Thank you.
Thank you. The other one that's really hard, so that's why I wanted to get the others out of the way, Brian Bertrand, and again, for the record, Senator Arnie Roblin, District 5, was a student of mine. His family, his father was a teacher at my high school. His three older sisters went through before him at our high school. He was one of those kids that other kids love to have around, wasn't afraid of getting in trouble as long as the other kids thought it was kind of fun, and cared about being part of all sorts of things. Football was his sport. He was an outside linebacker and a pretty amazing one. Really a good athlete. His dad was also a really great athlete at Medford, and so when Sal Escoval and Caddy McEwen called and asked me if I would check with the family to see if they would be willing to be a part of this, I've known them for a long time. They're very quiet internal people. When it first happened, they were not in any position to acknowledge that at the time. In fact, all of the media in the country came to the funeral at our high school, and his parents came and brought me a bunch of stuff and said, "Could you meet the media? Because we aren't going to do that at home." And so we had a thing set up in my principal's office, and I met with the media. There was a lot of media. This was the first group of Americans after 9/11 that died in Afghanistan on an airplane that ran into a mountain. and all of the members were killed. Brian was a kid's kid who never really took his intelligence real seriously in high school. He was going to get through, and he was going to do what he needed to do. But it wasn't until he joined the Marines that he found purpose in his life. And if you talk to his dad and mom, who, as I said, I called them about this, and they both said, we're ready. We wanted to have this memorial. So that's why we had this system in the house. Our choir from Marshfield came, and a principal and a whole bunch of family members came for Brian. At the high school, we have a 1,300-seat auditorium. It was full. We had, it's the first time I really understood what it's meant by leave no one behind in Afghanistan. When the Marines showed up to do the advance work, it was rather impressive. There was someone with Brian the whole time he was brought back, and while he was at the high school waiting for the funeral services. I got to meet a number of those people, and some of them were friends of his. To tell you the kind of thing, Brian, when he got out of the aviator school, he called his parents to tell him he didn't think he could do that. They do a six-month program that takes the Air Force 12 months. He may have been the last navigator in the Marines to circumnavigate the globe in his C-130 using the stars and to navigate. After that, it went to more automated stuff. And he was really proud of that. And when he was getting ready to come home, his group was being deployed back home. There was another friend in another unit who was a navigator who had a family, and it was Christmas time. So he said, hey, I'll take your deal. You go home for Christmas, which he did. Brian stayed. That was the kind of kid he was, always took care of other people. There was another soldier that talked about how he was being bullied when he was in the service, and Brian helped take care of it. And solve the problem for him. So a lot of people came to that service because they really cared about this young man. And I will tell you, it was, I felt really honored by the family to be the person speaking for the family at different times. I continued to meet with them, and they were some of the first people when my son passed away to contact us. But his three sisters are pretty impressive people as well. One is married to a teacher that I had at the high school who is now teaching at North Bend. But I commend you to this one. It is nice to remember. It was really great to see all the family here the other day in the house. And Brian has been missed, will continue to be missed, but has a following of people who feel very, very comfortable about him. He took over outside linebacker after my son graduated. So it was, we had a nice connection in that way as well. So I commend you, Mr. Bertrand, for recognition for this award, and was pleased that the family was able to come and participate in these honors. So thank you very much. Any questions on any of them, I'd be glad to answer. But it was a hard day last week in the House for me.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
It's going to be a hard day carrying all of these.
It is what it is, and they had a harder day.
Yep.
Well, thank you for bringing these forward, and I would only recommendation I have is do them in the same order you just did it, because they're going to get harder as you go along. You saw me, you know, on the floor
really
recently, because, you know, two of those members were actually in units that either were next to my command, or I was in those same units at one time, and so it gets, the passage of time, as you and I both personally know, doesn't help at all.
No.
So we will be moving these at the end, and of course you will be the carrier for several of these. So
great.
With that, colleagues, we're going to close the public hearing on the four HCRs and open a final public hearing on HCR 210. Representative, if you would, please. I believe Representative Malmstrom is his.
This is previously heard also.
And this has already been heard once before. And so is there anyone else that wants to testify on HCR 210? If not, we're going to close the public hearing again on HCR 210. We're going to open a work session on HCR 202, 203A, 204A, 205, 207, 209, and 210. And Council, I am going to ask you to at least read who they recognize for the record before we move forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 202. Is on behalf of First Lieutenant Frederick Pokorny Jr. HCR 203A is on behalf of Deputy Thomas Robert Farrell. HCR 204A is on behalf of Deputy Gil Calentino Dayton, forgive me if I mispronounced it. HCR 205 is on behalf of Private Class Bryce M. Scott. HCR 207 is on behalf of Oregon State Police Trooper Ralph D. Bates. HCR 209 honors Lance Corporal Brian Paul Bertrand. And HCR 210 honors Firefighter Ryan Grimaldi.
Colleagues, we're in a work session, and we are going to move the House concurrent resolutions in block that do recognize seven different soldiers, Marines, troopers, deputies, and officers for their ultimate sacrifice to the country. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boquist, I move House concurrent resolution 202, 203A, 204A, 205, 207, 209, and 210 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanderson moves House concurrent resolutions 202, 203A, 204A, 205, 207, 209, and 210 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there further discussion for the members? Is there any opposition? Oh boy. Any opposition? If not, so ordered. And that's 210. Let me, okay. Colleagues, here we go down the assignment list. Senator, Lieutenant Picorni actually has a link to Medford, so we're going to ask Senator DeBoer to carry 202, and I will ask if something happens that Senator Manning be prepared to cover that one. We're going to ask Senator Roblin to carry 203A, 204, 205, and 209. If Senator Roblin is absent during that time, the Vice Chair or myself will be the second for those. And we're going to ask Senator Riley to carry 210, because there is a link to his district in 210. If not, then I will either Senator Mona Sanderson or I will carry that if Senator Riley cannot. So I think we have covered all of the carriers.
Mr. Chair.
207 I will carry. So just to repeat. 202 will be carried by Senator DeVore, 203 by Senator Roblin, 204 by Senator Roblin, 205 by Senator Roblin, 207 by Senator Boquist, 209 by Senator Roblin. He's going to have a bad day. 210 by Senator Riley, and then Vice Chair Monison Anderson and I will fill in behind those, except for Senator Manning for 202 if it does not work out for Senator DeBoer. So we're going to close the work session for the HCRs. Madam Vice Chair, I would ask you to close out our day with your observations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are many words of soldiers of the Oregon National Guard. Their words are in this Voices of the Guard, and this was one of the best moments of one of our Oregon National Guard members. He says, "It was the day I was awarded my Purple Heart. But that wasn't what made it so memorable. One of the guys in our unit had earned a Silver Star for valor. His name was Matthew Zedwick, and he received a Silver Star moments after I received my Purple Heart. General Chastain, he was pinning the Silver Star on Matt, and he looked Matt in the eyes, and he said, 'My father earned the Silver Star in World War II. And growing up, and even to this day, he is my hero. Sergeant Sedwick, you are now on the same level as my father.' And he actually saluted Sergeant Sedwick. Officers do not salute enlisted soldiers. Sergeant Sedwick had a general saluting him." To me, that was one of the coolest things I saw. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Colleagues, we do not have anything posted for agenda on Wednesday. We are on 1 hour notice. I don't anticipate anything to be kicked back to us. The President's office is continuing to work the emergency preparedness bill, which between ICE and that delayed me coming down, and I apologize, Madam Vice Chair, and apologize to those who had to await. Though I don't anticipate anything, we of course don't close out first session deadlines till Thursday night. You never know what will happen. You know, we've crossed the line of departure, and who knows what happens next. So with that, colleagues, we are done for the day. Thank you.